Welcome back to the Last Lap podcast. No race. Well, there is a race this weekend, but this is a non-race weekend, and therefore we have a guest. Now, Niren cannot be with us today, but you know what? I think a slight upgrade. You know what I mean? I'm quite happy with that. I think a slight upgrade.
That's bold, but let's go with that if you want. Sorry. Oh, of course. It's not me, actually. My apologies.
Minton is on the mic today. No, a slight upgrade with Minton and a massive upgrade with today's guest, Claire Cottingham. Welcome to the Last Lap podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming along today. And I didn't tell you I was going to bring him today, actually, but I'm glad when I messaged you saying that I've brought this one.
Yeah, I could have been like, response. I'm allergic to dogs, but...
Yeah, that was a risk. But you know what? We took it. How are you doing, Claire?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you. Yeah, I'm not in Austin this weekend. So it's a bit of a weird one because people are already traveling out there and I'm not a big fan of that. But, you know, fine. Whatever.
I've seen a lot of stories, getting a lot of FOMO.
I know. And I forget because I do it as well. Mm. So I can't be that angry with people because I am the same person that's like, look, here I am. So, you know, have fun, everyone in Austin, you know.
Brilliant. Well, look, I mean, Austin for me is right up there. Have you been before?
No, I've never done Austin. It's one of the ones. Austin and Japan are two of the ones that I've never done and I would love to.
And they're like the two, yeah. I think they're probably the two top of my list.
But... Yeah, and they're apparently two of the best. So, yeah. I mean, not for me.
Well, clearly not. Are you doing something wrong, Claire, if you've not been yet?
So, I know.
But to anyone listening and watching who maybe doesn't know what you do, Claire, what's your relation to Formula One?
Well, this year at the moment, I'm working for a website called racefans.net, and I am a F1 reporter, journalist. So I'm at 17 races, I think, this year. I've got only two left, actually, because I'm not doing the triple header. Mm-hmm. So I've got Las Vegas, which I'm very excited about, and Abu Dhabi, which I'm also very excited about. Because, you know, title decider? No, that's not. Sorry. It's already happened. That's what I'm doing this year. In the past, I've done various different things, like working for 5 Live, worked for Channel 4, various different pit lane reporter roles. Nice. So, yeah, keep myself busy.
So how long have you worked in the industry for?
That's a personal question. No, I started working for the BBC, and through them, I then worked as pit lane reporter covering for Jenny Gow when she was doing Formula E. And that was in like 2016, I think.
Nice.
But I've been working in motorsport before that. I was working for the British Touring Cars for ITV, and I still do that because it's one of my great gigs that I love doing. So I don't know. How old am I now? My maths is never very good. I would say like a decade. Let's go decade.
Nice.
A decade.
A decade deep of experience.
Yeah, because I started when I was three, so.
you must have seen, like, since 2016, you know, the sport's changed a lot.
Yeah.
I can imagine, like, from the outside it certainly has, and from the inside probably even more, right? Or maybe not.
No, well, it depends what you mean by change. It depends, obviously, the drivers change all the time. The attitude in terms of how Formula One has progressed since, obviously, Drive to Survive. I'm sure you've talked about that countless times, everyone has. And yes, there is a lot more people that are coming to events now. We have a lot more issues with, you know, things like traffic jams. Hotels are very expensive, flights are more expensive. But also it's great. There's more people that are coming, you know. It's a wonderful thing to see. And just in the way that we consume Formula One has massively changed, obviously, with TikTok and all the various ways social media has changed. So, yeah, in that way, I guess, yeah, you're right, it has changed quite a lot. But in terms of, like, the core idea of Formula One, I wouldn't say that's changed.
Yeah.
I think that's still...
I guess it's kind of gradual, isn't it? Each year, something happens which doesn't feel maybe significant in isolation, but then you spread that from 2016 to 2023.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden it all adds up.
Well, if you think about 2016, like one of my first races was when Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton had clashed. It couldn't have been Spain. I think it was Austria. Did they clash in Austria in 2016?
When didn't they? Exactly.
My memory.
They did, yeah.
So I had this thing. So it was my first ever race working for 5 Live. And obviously for 5 Live, they were like, Lewis Hamilton, we need Lewis Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I was like, fine, okay, Lewis. And obviously Nico had crashed. So he was the first out and he came out, you know, the way he always used to, kind of walked over, looked around the pen and went straight to me. And it was my first ever race. So it was, for me, I was like, the German has just come over to me that is, I'm waiting for Lewis Hamilton. Okay, fine, let's go. So I got the first sort of response of him being incredibly frustrated and upset at Lewis Hamilton, and me just going down to my producer, so that was Nico, he spoke to us first, so he's quite angry. Okay, thanks. But I just remember being like, why is it come to me? Because usually the way they do it, they kind of go to their, you know, the nationalities, and then they'll come to us, sort of thing. But yeah, it just completely beelined for me and just was like, I was like, okay. I don't know what to say.
Do you think that was maybe because you were a new face and he just, I don't know.
Maybe I looked safe.
Have you ever asked him since, like, about that at all?
I don't think he's going to remember me from that one moment. It might be more of a me memory than a him memory. No is the answer to that. But it could have been that I was new. Usually new faces, they're a little bit more kind of standoffish with, because it takes a long time to build trust with drivers. Yeah, and once you build a nice trust, you can have that sort of nicer relationship with them. But when you first sort of meet them, they can be a bit like, not sure about you. Mm. And they work you out, and then they kind of work out whether they like you or don't like you from that, basically.
I can imagine. Like, obviously, that was your first kind of insight, 2016. And what a battle you signed up for as well when you first jumped in. Are you getting any kind of, because there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about Lewis and George right now. Mm. And I think the similarities are quite clear from the outside looking in. But are you getting that same sense of that type of fight? Or was that different? I get, because they were fighting for a championship.
Yeah.
So there's an internal, it's all well and good talking about internal rivalries. But when you're fighting for a championship, I think, fair enough, the gloves kind of come off. I think when you're not fighting for a championship, for me, it's just, it's silly. It's counterproductive to the overall cause. But I mean, Toto signed up for another 2 years of George and Lewis, and it's like, they're not even fighting for wins yet, and they're tripping over loads.
I heard you guys talking about this in your last podcast, and I sort of agree. It was funny because I was listening and I was like, oh, yeah, like I haven't really thought about it in the way that they're obviously two rivals because they're just not fighting for a championship, of course. It's an interesting dynamic because Lewis is obviously the senior member. And when they clashed at the beginning of Qatar, I remember thinking, this is going to be really unhappy Lewis Hamilton coming over, because he had already said on the radio how unhappy he was. And so I didn't know which way it was going to go. George on the radio was really different. And I asked George about this as well. George went, I'm very angry he crashed into me. And then he went, oh no, I can't, like, you know, 5 minutes. I mean, look, we get delayed radio, so don't get me wrong. The radios are picked and chosen for what, you know, Formula One decide that we should hear. But the initial radio was, I'm really angry, he just crashed into me. And then he was like, oh, actually, I kind of, you know, I've taken a step back a bit. Lewis, however, we only heard the sort of, I've been taken out by my teammate team radio. But obviously after that, he was out of the car. So the radio is, you know, is no longer. So when he came over to us, I thought, I saw him in the TV pen first, because he goes to the TV pen, then he'll come over to us as written media. And I was trying to work out his body language, because with Lewis, you can kind of tell quite quickly what his body language is, in terms of if he's going to be in a kind of give you a lot of words, mood, or maybe a bit more, you know, one or two words. And he seemed all right in TV. So I was like, maybe he'll be okay. And he came over, and he was absolutely fine. He didn't do the line at the point, because he took to Twitter to say, I 100% think it was my fault. But he came over and he said, look, I'm the senior member here, and I get that. It looks like it probably was my fault. And I thought that was really interesting language, because I was like, it looks like it's my fault because I'm the senior member. And I was like, so you're taking the blame because you're the senior member. That's not quite how it's going to work. But from what you guys were talking about last week, I was like, that is a quote that's really now playing on my mind, because yes, afterwards he took 100% fault for it. But at the point of heat, which is not a time that we always take exactly what the drivers think, because remember, there's adrenaline and all sorts of, they've just stepped 100%. Out. But it was really interesting that he used that wording, I'm the senior member of the team.
Yeah.
And I thought, I wonder what he means by that. Does that mean that he sees himself as like the senior member and therefore still number one? Mm-hmm. Or does he see himself as a senior member as a mentor role? Like, how does he mean that senior member role? So yeah, it's interesting. If these battles continue, there has to be a question that's asked about, you know, they don't want to get to a Nico and and Lewis stage. They don't want to end up
not at all
perceiving in the car that they hate each other. That's obviously not what they've said, but, you know, that was the rumors at the time. You know, they don't want that. They want harmony. But at the same time, you can't have harmony. You've got to have two races that are fighting at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see how that progresses as it goes on.
That's what I mean. It does feel like, you know, Toto's spoken in the past about, you know, that Hamilton-Bottas dynamic was such an amazing dynamic. You know, Bottas never missed Q3 in 5 years of that team. So he was always there, but Lewis almost always had pretty much always had the leg over him. It was like 30-70 in terms of like qualifying head-to-head over the course of their career. So I think that, you know, Toto's signed up for this for two more years. And you could, obviously, individually, their talents are unquestionable. But, I mean, they've got a big upgrade this weekend. Mercedes is coming as well. Mm. So, like, do you really, do you think, because someone's going to catch Red Bull eventually. It's going to be somebody.
Yeah.
I think you've got Mercedes, their driver lineup, potentially the Achilles heel, even if the car gets there, because Red Bull have this clear 1-2.
Yeah.
McLaren, you could argue Piastri's getting close. He's maybe not too close. You know, Charles and Carlos at Ferrari. You know, do you think Mercedes have the pieces? Because, you know, Alisson's back in with the F1 team now. They've got the pedigree.
Yeah.
They've got Lewis really pushing, seemingly. I'm talking about this next, you know, this off-season development needs to be the best development they've ever done. You know, do you think Mercedes will, if you had to say today, do you think Mercedes will be that team? Because it's going to be one of them that catches them first. But McLaren looks so...
Do you know what, this year, and we've talked about it quite a lot in the paddock, two drivers, that it's been a year that we've never... We always go into a race weekend with a complete unknown. Mm. We've never known... We're starting to see a little bit more now of patterns and trends and cars that suit certain tracks. But for the until the summer break or so, we were a bit like, well, I don't know who this track's going to suit. On paper, it should suit the Aston Martin. On paper, it should suit the Mercedes. And suddenly, it was like... Everyone just ripped up all those rule books and went, I don't know, let's just throw them on and see what happens. And that's literally what it felt. And you were like, okay, hang on. McLaren did really well at that track, but they didn't do well at that track, but they were meant to do well at that track. So what about Mercedes? Mercedes went to do it. And you're like, oh, I don't know anymore. And I remember the amount of times I've asked like Charles Leclerc, like, how do you think you're going to fare this weekend? And he's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, great.
If even they don't know, what are we meant to do?
I know, exactly. And you know, and there's just so many unknowns. And we're going to have a whole new unknown thrown in for Las Vegas because we've got cold weather, which is not something we're used to apart from testing and things like that. So that's going to be a whole nother unknown. And are we going to see similar issues with, you know, obviously there's no curbs, but are we going to see similar issues with tires and stuff like that we saw in Qatar? Very different. I appreciate that. But we are going to have questions that are asked about these tires again in Qatar. So look, I don't know is the answer, a very long-winded way of saying I don't know. I think Mercedes are definitely in, they know what makes a winning team, whereas McLaren are still trying to find their way. And if McLaren need to be careful to look after Lando at the same time as nurturing a very new young talent that they have coming through, which is very exciting. Mm. But there is that dynamic of Lando's wanted to win for so long. You know, I interviewed him in one of the races. We sat down upstairs. Where was it? Zandvoort, one of them. I think it was Zandvoort. And I asked him the question, I said, you know, does it still feel like you have that monkey in your back? And he was like, I think about it, but I don't think about it every single day, you know? And that's, he will now. Mm. He will be thinking about it now because even though it was a sprint win, that's going to be back in the forefront of his mind.
Do you think he thinks about it because he knows people talk about it or because it actually bothers? Because it, I mean, it's easy to say from the outside looking in, but he really shouldn't let it bother him because it's gonna come. Like there's so much nuance to getting a victory in Formula One.
Yeah.
And so much like you have to, I mean, there's been opportunities, obviously, you know, Russia was a great opportunity where, in my opinion, I think the team let him down because they didn't, you know, you have to rely on your team in those instances. And you I think you could see the team in that instance in Russia where they, their lack of almost experience fighting for a win kind of almost shone through. And I think I felt like the whole team got flustered. That was kind of my opinion, my take on that. But like it will come, but I just wonder where he gets that pressure from.
I mean, you tell a Formula One driver that they need to chill out before they win, I guess is what is what I'm saying. You know, you tell like Carlos Sainz in Singapore, actually, you know, this whole DRS train isn't working. Please step back and let Lando win. Carlos would never have done that. Charles is faster than you. Carlos would never have let him. It doesn't matter. A Formula One driver is built and only built to win.
Yeah.
So yes, I agree. I would absolutely agree with you. Lando Norris should not be thinking about that. He's an incredible talent. He's shown his skill at McLaren. He stayed loyal to them and he will win because he just will. That's just, he's just a very good driver.
Matter of time.
Exactly. But you tell him not to think about it. I dare you. You go tell him.
Well, McLaren, if you want to invite me to the MTC and have a little chat with McLaren, yeah. I'm sure I'd be open happy to accept that. Yeah, yeah, we'll take that one.
You know your teammate, he beat you. Do you think about that every single day? Well, I reckon you don't. Yeah, go on then.
What have you made of Oscar? Talking to McLaren, because I know you've chatted with Oscar one-to-one, and you know, I've sat down with Lando and Oscar this year as well earlier, and both of them are what they come across on camera, but like, it's so impressive how just measured Oscar is.
Yeah. I remember when I got into some heat with social media, because who doesn't these days?
Shock.
I know. So shook. Because I'd said to him at the beginning of the season, I felt that every time I sat down with him or interviewed him, it felt a little bit like deer in headlights. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're going to have to like do something to kind of come out of your shell a little bit so we can kind of work with you and get the quotes that you want and we want. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how it works. That's how the media work. We work with the drivers. They give us what we want. You know, Fernando Alonso is a great example of someone that works the media incredibly well to his advantage. You have to. And Lance Stroll is maybe someone that doesn't work the media to his advantage.
Yep.
We are, as an entity, the media, powerful in helping drivers, and people that can work that out get that. So when I first interviewed, or we first sat down with Oscar, I just remember being like, he just feels like he's holding back. And slowly but surely throughout the year, and I don't know whether that's just because the car's come alive and he has something more to talk about now and things like that, he's just been coming out of his shell a little bit more. The Ashes really helped as well when we were playing the Ashes, because obviously we lost and they won. But they were playing at the time during race weekends. And so we always had that good thing. We could just joke with him about cricket before we kind of went into, you know, the car struggling this weekend. So I've seen like him kind of progress throughout the year and just come out of his shell in a really nice way, in a way that you're like, oh, there he is. Come on, out you come. Like, kind of coaxing him out. Come on.
That's definitely come across.
He's definitely changed. And with that, I guess, comes confidence within the race car. The race car is obviously better since the upgrades. It's been nice. And I think that will only progress. And I was trying, it's really interesting actually, because I remember someone messaging me being like, how dare you, Oscar looks like, you know, a cat. I don't know, not a deer in the headlights. I don't know, whatever it was. But she got very annoyed at me, and I left it, because you don't feed the trolls ever. But like I thought about that, and I thought, when have we seen a rookie come in that has been so measured and chilled and almost not looking like they're there for the spotlight? And that's not me saying that drivers come in and they only look for the spotlight, but most of them don't they come in with a level of confidence already, whereas Oscar just felt like he just came in and was like, I'm gonna race the car and you guys are gonna be there too, if that's cool. Whereas other people are like, I'm gonna race a car and I'm gonna win and I'm gonna get points in my first race, and he was like, I'm just gonna do it and then be good.
And I think it helped his transition, because there was a lot of pressure because of the whole Alpine situation, the contract situation. Of course, like, that was massive news, right? And him coming in and just letting the driver do the talking, and maybe even helps that McLaren being a bit rubbish at the start of the year, because then all of a sudden they're both struggling to walk back. We know what Lando's capable of. They were both going out in Q1s and really struggling. And McLaren, rightfully played down expectation. I remember like going to were you at the launch for McLaren this year? Because I was, but I don't remember.
No.
I saw you there. Because I was there at the MTC for the car launch at the start of the year. And I remember,
I was at a different launch. I think it clashed with a different one.
Yeah.
And so someone else was at McLaren and I was at, somewhere else.
That's
a long time ago.
Yeah, it is a long time ago. That's back when McLaren were rubbish, because now they're flying. But even then they were playing down expectations. I think that's really kind of helped Oscar's transition, because you've got that lack of pressure at the start, and he's just coaxing and just...
Someone I don't think has spoken about enough in McLaren is actually their team principal. Because when Andreas Seidel left, I was like, that's a big name to leave. Like, he's a big character.
I was worried.
Yeah. I was worried, because I was like, I get on obviously well with Seidel as well. And he's obviously at Alfa Romeo now and he's got big plans for there. But I remember when he was leaving and I was like, okay, Andrea Stella's coming in. He's an engineer. I don't really know him that well. I've seen him around the team and he hasn't got any, you know, team principal credentials to his name. And I was like, okay, well, let's see how that goes. They obviously know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Seidel would, you know, helped him into that role. So they'd obviously worked towards it together. And actually, he's one of the most calm and measured and down-to-earth, decent human beings that I think I've ever met in that paddock. He's so chatty and he's so nice. And every time he sits down, he's always like, he goes around and say hi to everyone and make sure everyone's okay. And, you know, oh, hello, everybody. And you know, if they're not ready to start the interview, he'll always stop and start chatting to someone, but not chatting about gossip. He's telling you about, you know, what he did that weekend with his family. You know, he's very much like... just a really like level-headed bloke.
I remember seeing it was, I'm not sure if you were part of the group, but there was a group of, I think it was press, and he was showing them all the McLaren upgrades.
Yeah, he does
in the garage.
Yeah, he
like,
does
super detailed, yeah. Like way more than anyone was expecting.
I'll tell you what happens in those usually. So every Sunday morning we get from the FIA three cars that have to show, that have to do a tech talk with us. So that's how it just sort of goes. And I wasn't at that race. I seem to remember it might have been Japan because it's a small amount of journos go there.
Yeah, I think so.
However, the first one we ever did, he did exactly that. He took us to the McLaren. He showed us around it. Usually the tech talk is a whole load of armpits in my face and us trying desperately to get the quote from whoever's in front of us. And I'm just like men's arms everywhere on me. That's usually what I get. So, but the point is that we're meant to go and see the car and see what's going on and see the upgrades and things. And Andrea will always go in and be like, do you want to see the car? Do you want to come in? Do you know, if it's a bigger group, it's harder because it's a garage that they're working on. But if it's a smaller group, he'll always be like, do you want to come in? And he'll point at, and he just goes through everything. And you're like, you learn everything. Like every time I speak to him, I've learned something new.
Yeah.
And he's also one of those team principals that actually, if you asked a silly question or what I might perceive as a silly question, he'll just be like, oh, no, that's fine. I'll just explain it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not many people in that paddock that you can admit that you don't know something and that you're okay to ask it.
Yeah.
There's not many of those because usually you're like, I know everything, obviously. Obviously.
And the thing is, like, he's not been a team principal for long. This is his first, but he's been in the game for a long time. You know, he was back at Ferrari giving Fernando the, was it Fernando 2010? And he was the one on the radio. Fernando.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he didn't quite win the title.
Yeah.
So he's been around for a while, Stella. And Vowles as well. You know, we've got two first-time team principals this year that have made steps. And they are risks because you're not taking on. But it just goes to show. And I think James comes across... I mean, Andrea comes across very well, but James really seems to like... He's made a lot of fans, I think, amongst the community.
James, I think, has taken so much from what Toto Wolff does, which is, again, being an incredible people person. A lot of people, I think, or lots of ways that Formula One used to work, and this is, you know, going back to your first question, how much have you seen that's changed? What we talk about now is, you know, driver mental health. We talk about, you know, the how difficult this is just in general for everybody to be traveling around the world for 22 races, being away from their family, 24 races next year. You know, do you need people... like people persons sometimes you just need that.
Definitely.
And what someone like Toto Wolff and obviously Toto Wolff not being an engineer, but someone like, you know, Andrea Stella brings is that he has the knowledge, but he also knows how to look after his drivers. And he's got two very young drivers there, one of them who has spoken out quite a lot about, you know, mental health and things like that. And you've got a very young man in Oscar. So he's managing them incredibly well.
It's a huge responsibility.
Huge, huge. It's their, you know, it's their early 20s. Yeah. And you've got to look up because that's a very impressionable age. Got to keep them grounded. You've got to keep them level-headed. And you've got to keep them strong to be racing drivers. So for me, I think that's something that's really incredible that Stella's brought. And not many people mention him. I always hear people go, McLaren have done great, haven't they, this year? And I'm like, yeah, let's give some of the credit to Andrea Stella, because I think he's been amazing with it. And you don't often hear his name, but you'd always hear Toto Wolff. You'll always hear Christian Horner, even James Vowles. You hear him a lot more than you hear Andrea Stella, because he just keeps himself to himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, great, just in the background, just being
He's
amazing.
Like the Oscar Piastri of team principals.
Yeah. And it works really well. Yeah. And it works. And it helps that, you know, he just seems like a nice bloke as well that gives good advice to them and help.
Which again is like, I think we forget that human side. It's easy to, you know, just focus so much on like, all the build up is for this Sunday race.
Yeah.
Well, apart from when there's sprints. Actually, because this is the first triple header with two sprints, right?
Yep.
How's that going down amongst?
Sprint races are incredibly hard in terms of scheduling. So obviously Thursday is press day. That's our normal press day. But then Friday is just, it's like three incredibly intense days because Friday is then qualifying. So journos and usually qualifying is obviously in the afternoon/evening because we've got practice in the morning. So that brings a lot of journos' days lots and lots later, and engineers and everybody that's working, you know, on cars and stuff like that. Then you have a whole separate day for the sprint day, which means you have to be in early for qualifying, and then you're, you know, staying, and then, you know, you treat it as a race. So then you're staying again, engineers staying, drivers staying, everyone's staying. And then you have the whole race day. So they are a lot more intense than a normal race weekend. I don't, you know, come for me in the comments, whatever. I don't mind a sprint weekend.
I don't mind a sprint weekend.
I think the only thing I have issue-wise, if you want to call it an issue, the only suggestive feedback I'd put into the into the box would be Saturdays just don't hold anything. I liked it when it had meaning. You know, the the way that you finished in the race meant that's where you qualified for the next day. And I know some purists maybe didn't like that so much, but it meant it Saturday had something to fight for. Whereas now it's not so much. So I liked that format, but I'm not against it.
Yeah, I'm not fundamentally against it. I think there's still more to do. I think you need to make sprint qualifying feel different.
Yeah.
Because it, like, I don't know about you, but whenever I'm doing my like post-race wrap, like after the Sunday, and I'm thinking about qualifying, I just get the two mixed up all the time because they're exactly the same.
Ask me anything about Friday qualifying on Sunday morning. Nope.
No idea.
I'm like, someone qualified somewhere.
There were two pole positions, probably both.
And even when you're writing it the next day, you're like, okay, so hang on a minute.
Yeah, that
was qualifying for the sprint. And then you just, so that's the one thing, not a clue. And also on Fridays, we don't have to mandatory speak to the drivers. So if some big drama happens, TV does, but written media doesn't speak to the drivers after qualifying. So if something big happens, then it's just like, okay, speak to you on Saturday afternoon after the sprint race. But by that point, you've had another qualifying session and a sprint race.
Everything's
so
moved
it's madness.
On. That is, I feel like I can endorse this more because I know Fernando Alonso suggested it, one shot.
I thought you were going to say, because I know Fernando Alonso. I was like, oh, right, okay.
I just dropped him a little DM before we started.
Actually, he's just messaged this second.
Can't read a word of Spanish.
Hola. No, that's it.
No, he's said about one shot, and I've been saying about one shot. I'm sure plenty of you listening now, I've been talking about this
one shot.
I think just give it a go for the sprint.
Yeah.
Just give one shot a go. I'm not sure, like, you could find a way of trying to because every argument against it is, oh, it's not fair because of tire, like track evolution. But there's lots of things that aren't fair about normal qualifying, like traffic getting in the way. You wouldn't have that with one shot. You know, you still have track evolution. You'd have teammates drafting each other and giving slipstream. That
Formula E do it? Didn't they do one shot at one point?
I think
they did.
Maybe
like
they did.
Top 10 was like the one one shot.
Well, they've got that whole new format, which is actually quite
shock.
Yeah,
like they've had a lot of different formats in their qualifying.
I quite like their current format for Formula E. I wouldn't want that. Not in F1, but I quite like it for Formula E. I think it works there.
Now I remember they definitely did. Again, I'm sure I'll be corrected, but they definitely did like a top 10 shootout. I'm sure
F1
they
used to have it.
F1 did briefly. F1 had it for a bit.
But the coverage was like, it wasn't very good then, but you've got so many camera angles.
Yeah.
You could make a massive song and dance with graphics of like, right, this is like, so one person's doing their lap and the next person's maybe, I don't know, once they cross the finish line, just so they haven't like crashed on their lap, then the next person can start and you can use all the different camera angles or you can tell a story and really make like, bring eyeballs to like each car.
I just think it needs something different. I don't care what it is, to be honest. They could take away the wheels and see how it works and just run the car. Like, I don't care what they do.
Yeah.
It just needs to be slightly different.
Yeah.
see if that works. I mean, Max will still win. But, you know. But I just think it needs to be rather than... But then I speak to other people and they like the standalone event. So the answer is you can't please everyone.
Yeah,
but please,
true.
Could we just please me? And that would be fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what really matters.
Yeah, as long as clearly. This is about me.
Yeah, I think it will change. I like that they've been experimental to an extent. And I think you've got to try because there's certain things that, in theory, they might make sense, but actually in practice, you know, there's people far more intelligent than me making all of these decisions and calls, and sometimes they get them wrong as well.
Yeah, I know they're trying. Obviously, it's getting a bit. I will say it's getting a little bit complicated with the amount of changes. Obviously, they put the ATA tires in as well for a couple of the races this time to try and try out new things. So, and nobody likes that, as it seems, because nobody likes the hard tire.
Mm.
But it does seem like you're building this audience of getting lots of people in the sport, and then you are overcomplicating it just a little bit. So it could have been that's why they went back to just a straight format Saturday. then it doesn't confuse it for the next day for the grid and things like that. And it has a standalone event. And that could have been why they did it, to make it easier. But there is a lot of complications that come with F1 at the moment, yeah. I think.
And it sounds like a lot of the actual hosts want sprint races because you're going to more revenue. Like there's more eyeballs, and there's more eyeballs for the TV viewership is considerably up when you have qualifying on a Friday versus just practice. Mm. So I think that's the way it will gradually move towards.
But the one thing I would say is, if I remember when I worked, I've never really worked a 9-to-5. So, but when I worked for the BBC, I was working a 6 till 2 or whatever it was. Mm. And if I'm working a Friday, so that's an early morning. But if I'm doing a late, say, so I'm doing a 2 till 10 on a Friday afternoon into the evening, when am I going to watch qualifying? That's the only thing I would say. If you're working a 9-to-5 job and quali is at 2 in the afternoon. When you can't watch it live because you're at work.
It's difficult.
So there is a difficult...
It is. You're right. But I think also like time zones, you know, it's always inherently, because this sport is global, inherently they're always... I'm sure if there's a 2 p.m. qualifying, that might not be great for us in the UK. But then if you're 6 hours behind, it could be 8 p.m. in the evening. It could be... I guess there's always going to be... But you're right. It's going to... I think the total eyeballs is higher.
Yeah, I agree.
But also it's going to kind of push out certain fans. But
yeah. What do you, sorry, not to switch the host here, but what do you think of the,
what do you think
of the Saturday format for Las Vegas? How do you think that's going to work? Because I don't have an opinion particularly.
So it's, because we've got what? The race is on the Saturday night, isn't it?
So Wednesday is press day, and then Friday, Saturday, and then Saturday is race day. So it's Saturday at 10 p.m., I think, which is going to be chilly.
Well, we're going to be here at 6 a.m. UK time.
What a treat.
So, I'm going to be up at about 3:30 to get here for 5.
Nice.
Then,
lovely.
So that's... But you know what?
Dedication to the
course. Yeah, look.
Not to make you feel all bad, but that's what he does for this. This is... Yeah,
I have to do it like 3 times a year because like Suzuka, Vegas, and I think they're the...
Australia?
In Australia.
Japan's quite hard as well.
Yeah.
But Japan, you're already up, I guess, at 6, so you just have to be awake for the rest of the day.
Look, I can't sit here and complain too much. I know that we've got quite a big Australian audience and West Coast of American audience, so we have it a lot worse.
I do a great Australian accent when I'm drunk. Oh, I'm not drunk now, so I'm not doing it.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
I should have brought some Jaeger.
I did it around an Australian friend the other day. She was like, "You sound New Zealand." I was like, "I'll take it. I'll take it."
Oh, yeah. Can't get them too mixed up.
No. But it's not. It's you either say six or six.
Did you see that interview that Liam Lawson did with Kiwi TV? And he said his drink bottle got stuck in his nose, I think, on his first race.
I thought you were going to say during the interview. I was like, okay.
You know, they have the straw.
Yeah.
And I think, what was his first race?
Liam Lawson.
Yeah, Liam Lawson.
So it was just after Zandvoort. It was Zandvoort.
Yeah. And he said it's Zandvoort, because he'd never done that. I was getting junior formulas, don't have that. So he'd never, and he got it stuck in his nose.
For the whole race?
I think so, yeah.
Gosh. What bad journalism for
and
us.
And he still didn't put it in the wall. Yeah. So give that man a seat.
Yeah.
Actually, talking of that, should we... There's been a lot of rumours. I don't know where they've come from. It's Reddit will just pop out a rumour. Checo Perez retiring in Mexico is the latest one that's popped up.
I saw this. It's a great one.
What do you make? Because obviously you've got so much insight from the inside. And then these rumours pop up. And I mean, you are besties with Checo.
Besties.
That's my understanding of it anyway.
Yeah. That's another rumor that's on Reddit. I think I can be incredibly naive with rumors because I'm always like, that's never going to happen. Then it happens. And I'm always like,
and this is Red Bull.
Yeah. Is that, well, but this would be his choice in the defense of Red Bull. Why would he retire? He's 32 or whatever.
I understand. I think I understand why he would retire. I would get it. If that happened, I would get it.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
As a racing driver, you think he would just retire?
As a racing driver myself.
Yeah, clearly.
I think he... No, I could understand it. I could understand the pro...
I couldn't.
You look at his career, Force India, he's given Red Bull a go. He's never going to win a world title in that Red Bull.
Yeah.
The best he can get is a few more race wins, potentially, and then just... what that must do to a... Like, his career is... 2020 was like... arguably his best season in F1. Like he came into Red Bull off of such a high and he did his job and he's got race wins and he's had a lot of success with Red Bull relative to the rest of his career in terms of he's got the podiums and wins that maybe he deserved earlier in his career and didn't have the car to really do it consistently. But, you know, you say, he's in his 30s now, but he's got a family, he's got a life outside of Formula One, and to I feel like I would understand it. I wouldn't sit there and be shocked if he announced his retirement. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I think I would. I think I'm still going to say I would, because...
Well, what's keeping him there?
Money.
Well, I mean, it helps. For sure it helps. But I mean, to a point...
I get what you mean.
You know what makes me kind of sad? Because I think Checo's had such an amazing career, and he's done so much with like that Force India machinery,
yeah,
and the podiums he achieved and what he did to help out Max in 2021 even. And I just feel like he'll be remembered from just this guy who just got absolutely thumped by Max. And like, yeah, Alex and Pierre have been able to come back and almost like reinvigorate their careers because they're younger. And it's, I don't want Checo to leave on a, you know, Nico left on a high, the highest of highs.
Yeah.
And it feels like Checo,
probably.
I don't see it getting, he's done almost 3 full seasons at Red Bull, and this is the worst it's ever been relative to Max.
Do you know what? This is why I could never be on a jury, because I am this easily swayed. I'm like, yeah,
I've done it.
No, look, I still would find it surprising. Mm-hmm. I still would find it surprising if at the Mexico Grand Prix he'd said, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
I would find it surprising that timing at that place with the time that he has left. Mm-hmm. Would I find it surprising if over the off season he decides to step away? Maybe not as much. Would I be surprised to not surprise? I've confused myself with when I'm surprised now. I'm surprised all the time. So it's causing me surprise. Would I be surprised to see him back next year? No. Wait, is that the right type of surprise? It would be fine to see him next year.
Yeah.
We can edit this out.
Yeah, it's fine. It's all part of the fun.
No, but like my point being, during Mexico, that for me would be like, okay, well, that's mad. That's
because if he feels like he's going to get pushed, wouldn't you rather jump?
No.
And do it on your own terms at your home Grand Prix.
Lazy, push me.
Look, we it's probably nonsense. I mean, there's all like, if he doesn't finish second, there's...
Well, there will be clauses in his contract. So I don't know the clauses. I've not read it.
Yeah, yeah.
But there are definite clauses. That's not as outrageous to say as the Mexico one, to be honest, if I'm going to be really honest with it. There could be a clause that was put in at the beginning of this year when the contract was renegotiated, that you have to finish however many points behind Max, or you have to finish second, or you
percentage
have to... Or that might just be, you have to finish there and you'll get your bonus. Whatever it is, there will be a clause in that contract that says performance clauses, which we know of, because Max had one too.
Yep.
There are performance clauses that are in all of the drivers' contracts, as far as we know, but we're not in on that. But there will be something along those lines. So yes, that could be that he knows by Mexico, he can't mathematically get the right amount of points to get to where he wants to be. That could be.
It could be.
Mexico, he's worked it out and gone, well, I don't have enough points, so I'm going to get sacked anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. That is not me saying that's going to happen. This is speculation. This is rumors and Reddits and all that sort of thing. Like, I do not know what's happening to him. But my point being is that he might have done the maths.
Well, I'll tell you what, Claire. I know what isn't speculation.
Go on.
There is some breaking news that you might have heard.
I haven't. My phone's on silent under here.
Mick Schumacher will be participating in a WEC test with Alpine for 2024.
Cool. Oh, great.
Alpine will evaluate Schumacher's level before making a decision.
There you go. Breaking news. Alpine.
Yeah. Interesting.
Alpine.
I guess, does Toto still manage Esteban?
I was about to...
Is he still part of... I think he might be, because who's the... They did the F1 podcast with what is, I think he's at Mercedes. Look at him looking at
you. Poor, he's having a lovely time.
And it's the guy who's like, he's worked with a lot of the drivers, like Lando and...
Sorry,
George,
I got distracted.
And, I mean, it happens.
You're asking a question about someone to do with something that...
I still think there's
George's,
a connection.
George's management. Are you talking about George's management?
I know. I think Esteban like still has links to Toto.
I think he's... I don't know, because he split with Mercedes, didn't he, completely when
he went
to
Alpine. He did split with Mercedes.
So... I don't know. I can't actually remember that.
But either way, that's cool.
But I still, that wouldn't make a difference to maybe. He's like, I've got Esteban, here's Mick as well.
There's a line of communication.
I would assume. There'll be a reason that we're missing completely here.
Almost certainly.
Because it's a Renault car. Alpine's Renault.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Blue.
Well done, Mick.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all we say.
Happy for him.
He's a good guy.
I think...
Very sweet.
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it? Like him getting back into F1. Is I think a bit of an uphill battle, just because did he show enough?
Maybe he's going to join Lance Stroll and be part of the Aston Martin. No,
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe. I think that could be. He could.
We said this last week. There's lots of drivers. You know, Marcus Ericsson, Brendan Hartley, Kamu Kobayashi. You can go away from
Nico Hülkenberg. He went off and got a podium there. Still can't get one in F1. Did.
I remember I tweeted like, "Oh, some joke about Hülkenberg not having a podium."
Did that
and
go
the
down well?
Replies were just full of, "Oh, we actually got one in WEC." Like, yeah, I meant F1. Like, come on, obviously that's
specify
the joke.
What do you mean? At all points,
I'm making a joke.
This is why I don't tweet X/anything
no
anymore, because everything's just everyone kind of pulls things out of
people read what they want to read, but
yeah, so I don't do anything.
Such is life. Also, we haven't talked about Qatar. And I wanted to talk a bit about Qatar, because obviously the temperature and the physicality and the issues, and everyone's got an opinion, and we've seen some contrasting opinions. I know Martin Brundle's come out and you know, he's very much like, these drivers are meant to be the best drivers in the world and this is part of the job. And then the drivers have been, what we've seen, quite kind of, they want some change. Like, what have you heard and seen from those 20 people who are actually putting themselves in these cars?
Yeah, it was an interesting, so it was a hot weekend, and that sounds like an understatement for how warm it was. I did two physical excursions while I was out there. I did karting and I went for a track run. Both of them were terrible. I don't know why I did either of them. But karting was interesting. So we did karting with Alpine, which was great fun. But I did the qualifying session, which was a 10-minute session. Didn't qualify last. I'm very happy about that.
There you go.
I wasn't even second last. I was like 6 seconds off the slowest, which apparently, as I told someone, they were like, six seconds off the slowest, not the fastest. I was like, yes. I was like, I go down, not up. I was against Jack Doohan. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to win against him. Anyway, but I did the qualifying session and I get motion sickness anyway. So I came out and I was like, whew, I do not feel well. Mm. Like it was fine when I was in the car. And then I did my final lap, which I don't know if that was the fastest, because by that point I was just like flooring it.
Just holding on.
Track limits did not matter. And I crossed the line and I got out and I was like, oh, great. Okay. Oh, I don't feel well. Like, I do not feel well. And I was like, it must be motion sickness. Someone was like, it's dehydration. Go and get some water. And I downed so much water. And it just didn't go away. It wouldn't pass. And I sort of felt a bit better, but to the point where I was like, I don't want to take part in the race. I'm okay with not taking part in the race. Yeah, don't worry about it. And I felt really poorly. Went home that night, still felt a bit poorly. And then woke up in the morning and had like a motion sickness hangover. And I was like, well, that's weird. Okay,
motion
fine.
Motion sickness hangover?
Do you never have those?
No.
What, do you get motion sickness?
Not too bad.
Yeah,
A little bit.
So I can get quite bad motion sickness. Okay. Yeah. So I can never sit backwards on a train and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, my wife gets it really.
Yeah. So
never in the car.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't look down in cars and stuff. And it takes a while for your sort of like belly to reset itself, basically. Yeah. And the next morning I woke up just feeling a bit groggy, but kind of went during the day. Then in the evening I went for a track run. So I obviously don't have the smarts, but I went for a track run, and the track run was incredibly hot as well. And that was when it was like still 40 degrees. I felt okay after that, but I felt like my body was just like, it needs so much rehydration. It is dehydrated. And obviously, this has not really been like, so I totally get what the driver is going through.
So I experienced it.
I got it, guys.
I was the 21st driver.
I was there for, exactly, yeah. But my point being, in that very small amount of what I felt in 10 minutes of being in a kart, and obviously my physical fitness is not where the Formula One drivers is, and I appreciate that, and the, you know, nutrition-wise and et cetera, drivers are incredibly different. But even in just that 10 minutes, I just was like, I don't feel great. Mm. And I was like, this doesn't feel like good conditions to be out in. And especially when I went for my run as well, it was like 41 degrees. I was like, this is going to be incredibly hot for the weekend. When we spoke to the drivers afterwards, it was probably the most vulnerable I've ever felt the drivers have been.
Really?
When Lance Stroll came over, he was physically shaking. It was actually the most chattiest he's ever been. Mm. But he was physically shaking. He was drinking this, you know, his coconut waters. And I thought he was just going to like throw it on his face at the end of it. He was just like, he couldn't drink it quick enough. And I was like, okay. And he, to his credit, was chatting to us and stuff. But he was sweating and shaking and just looked kind of a bit dazed. When we had Charles came over, and he was one of the drivers that said it was sort of okay, but obviously not acceptable. But he was like red in the face, which again, Charles, you don't often see. Usually, if anything, he kind of goes a bit whiter than bright red, but he was really red in the face. Lando kind of looked fine because he didn't look like the, and so did Alonso. Alonso, absolutely fine. Esteban had had some time to kind of collect his thoughts because obviously he had chundered in his helmet twice,
yeah,
or however many times it was. Don't think he had time to, we must have showered. I did think about that. I was like, have you showered after you chundered on yourself? But anyway, didn't. And also I really wanted to ask a question of like, where was it? Like, was it just watery chundered?
It wasn't like when Mark Webber, yeah. Do you remember when it? And you heard the whole thing,
yeah,
as well.
Do you remember?
So, I mean, sometimes you've just got to swallow that.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's just some questions of like, what was the consistency of the sick? You can't ask that, obviously.
Probably not. Yeah, probably exactly, not. Yeah, yeah. But maybe next weekend.
I was quite surprised how long the drivers took to come out as well. Because usually a race finishes if there's been a few. Well, I think Logan was the first to retire, wasn't he?
Yes.
And obviously Lewis. And then other than that, there wasn't any other retirements. So usually you get a flurry of drivers. They all come through really, really quickly. Mm. And you're like, you have to, the written media tend to split into three groups and you just grab who you can. And then, you know, you do it that way. But this time it was like, driver. And I was like, where are they all? But they were all like, George came in a massive jacket. And I was like, are you wearing a jumper? He was like, yeah, I've just had an ice bath. You would never see them do that in anywhere else.
How did it compare to a typical like Singapore? Because Singapore is the one that gets the headlines for being the super hot one. Like, was it noticeably worse than Singapore?
It was the humidity. And obviously Singapore's known for the humidity. Mm. But for Singapore, it was a different heat. I almost can't explain the type of heat it was.
I said that, like, that opened the visors and it was just, there wasn't any air coming in.
Yeah, there was a couple of drivers. George opened his visor.
It's like someone just blows like a Dyson hairdryer right in your face. Like, that's not helping.
Yeah, it was just not the same heat. The humidity maybe was even higher than Singapore. Actually, I didn't check the two, but it was just, everything was hot. So even if you put your phone down for a second, it just burnt. So it wasn't only that, with Singapore, because it's nighttime, you don't have the burning sun. And yes, Qatar was obviously in the evening as well, but it still felt like the sun was shining. Mm. It was madness. And there's no way to explain the difference of the heat, because I'd literally just gone from Singapore to Qatar. And I think the difference is that like we hadn't had that heat all weekend. So the drivers hadn't climatized either. Whereas in Singapore, you're climatizing as soon as you step off the plane. Yeah. Like Singapore's just constant, just like, okay, I'm wet again. Great. Yeah, you know, you're just constantly just changing your clothes, showering, whatever it is. But with Qatar, we were lured into like a false sense of security, where it was like Friday was really windy. Thursday, I think, was windy, or Friday and Saturday were really windy, but kind of warm, but fine. Mm. But then Sunday was just like unbearable stillness and just like heat everywhere was just heat. You couldn't move for like, it felt like you were kind of pushing through mud to get anywhere because of just the heat.
And then with the mandatory free stop, everyone's pushing every lap.
Every lap's a quali lap.
Yeah, it's like it was just the perfect storm of factors.
This
like,
is the thing.
I think Qatar next year is at a different,
it's in November
time of year, isn't it? Yeah. So,
or is it December? It's later.
I think, later. Yeah, it's definitely, later.
It's a penultimate round, isn't it?
I like to think, it's one of them, it's look, everyone was fine in the end. That's the main thing. And it's a matter of, I think, just taking learnings. I know the FIA put out a statement, didn't they? They were saying about, you know, looking at ways to increase like airflow into the cockpit, et cetera, which I think is a good proactive step because, you know, yes, we might not get conditions just like this for a while because it was a bit of a one-off, but I think it's a learning opportunity that we can still like, all right, we know that this is possible.
Yeah.
This can happen. This could happen again in the right or wrong conditions, especially with how messed up the climate is in terms of like extremes now as well. And that seems to only be getting worse. So it's like, how can we as a sport be preventative? Because if Lance actually passes out doing 170 through, you know, S's, then I'm sure a lot of the people who are saying, oh, well, you know, they're 20 of the best they should be, they wouldn't be saying the same thing if someone puts it into the wall and that seriously injures themselves.
I'd be interested to see what comes out of that comment, actually, because obviously at the time Lance said, I passed out while I was driving, his team principal, Mike Crack, it's not comedy, Mike Crack, it is a little bit. No, we love Mike. Mike's an amazing guy. But he literally said, I need to find out what Lance meant by that, because it's exactly that. He either couldn't have been, or he felt like he was going to be. There's a really fine line. So I'll be interested to see what comes out of Austin if anyone asks that question. What actually was the feeling you were getting. Were you passing out, or were you feeling like you were getting lightheaded? Because there is a big difference.
Must have, sure. Yeah, you would think so, but
maybe, I guess, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, Formula One isn't, they're not mind readers. However, going to a country that is in that heat at that time of year was always going to be a risk of heat. And I'm troubled by the fact that the drivers were put into that position to have to deal with those conditions. Yes, they're strong enough to do it, but why are we putting them into those conditions? That's
sport. Everything's a choice.
Yeah.
That we do in F1.
I remember, you know, Esteban literally said, you'd have to kill me before I retired from that race.
Yeah.
And I literally went, don't say that. And he went, no, it's true. No, and I was like, no, still don't say it though, because like, it's just not a sport.
Yeah. It's an uncomfortable truth.
But that is how he feels.
It's like Lewis with the porpoising at Baku.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way he was going to stop early.
Back.
Yeah.
I know. I remember coming in when he came over, and I don't know if anyone else had asked, because sometimes people only get like one or two questions to ask. So the first question is your back all right?
Yeah.
I remember when he came over to the written side of things, he was clutching his back, and I went, are you all right? And he went, no, my back is in absolute tatters. Mm. And, you know, that's where those quotes came from, that he was, I think he maybe did tell F1 TV, I can't remember as well. But my concern is that, yes, that we can push them to those limits, but why are we deciding to?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I kind of stand. Yeah, they're strongest, they're sports people, they're the best people in the world, but why are we giving them the most extreme conditions to, like, check that that's as far as we can push them? You know, we don't need to do that. We know that they're incredible at what they do.
And look, I've seen comparisons being made to, oh, like triathletes and various. Yeah.
All right. I don't know why you keep doing that.
You push yourself to the limit, right? And you see people, you know, heat exhaustion and having to pull up in marathons and all that, right?
Yeah.
But you're not piloting 180 miles an hour, 798 kilo machine that can end your life and potentially others around you. Like, that's the difference.
It's a frustrating. So I've worked in lots of different sports, and every single sport has a different discipline, different way that they work, different levels of fitness, different, you know, they're all similar levels of fitness, but they're all working on different parts of your body to be the fittest that you are in your, you know, you're not seeing like maybe a cricketers do, but you're not seeing them putting, you know, the strap on their neck and making their necks bigger.
Yeah.
That is something that is unique to Formula One.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's part of me that's like, yeah, we can put that up against various other sports. Like, oh, people in golf, they stand there all the time in those heats. It's just not the same. And obviously triathlons are incredibly different, but it's not the same discipline. You can't say it's anywhere similar. It's completely different. And I don't know why people keep doing it and being like, wow, you know, well, okay, well, should we make them all do triathlons for the next race?
Yeah.
Like, and then see how they fare. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the comparison is. It's completely different. They were sitting in cars. Like, Fernando Alonso's bottom was on fire. Like,
he actually had burns.
He did have burns. Yeah, it was a hot old bottom.
Like, it's just, when I'm watching motorsport, I'm not getting any like, oh, yeah, I'm not getting any enjoyment from thinking like, oh, this driver's like really struggling. This driver's about to pass out at the wheel.
Yeah, oh, let's see how far we can push him. Turn the heat up, Truman. You know,
what?
It's like the Truman Show.
What
are
we doing?
You know, this is
and look, there's a lot of good reasons to hark back to the past. And like, I think, you know, back in the day when less aero and better sounding engines, right? There's a lot of but safety? No.
There's
I'm
no compromise.
Sorry.
There's no compromise. That's my main point. Why are we, yes, we could push them to there, but why are we? That's the issue I had with it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Anyway, we're going to make them do a triathlon in Austin. Make them run around.
Yeah, Valtteri does always cycling, doesn't he?
They could all do it, let's be honest. They're healthy boys, but
They've all got it in the locker.
Yeah, exactly. It's just that we're not going to make him do it in Qatar.
Well, hopefully we won't get that kind of situation again.
Well, hopefully this is the only positive that, you know, you take from these situations is that from, you know, horrible situations even, is that as long as there is a learning process that means that we don't do it again, then great. But I was personally not upset. That's not the right wording. But I was personally uncomfortable with how these drivers came to us.
Yeah.
They almost looked happy to see us. And I was like, the drivers are never happy to see the media. They were like, the race is over. Thank God. And I was like, oh, you're happy to see us? Who knew?
And there seems to be like a consensus from the drivers that, you know, this kind of thing shouldn't really be happening.
Yeah, they all said the same. Apart from even Fernando, said it, actually, to be honest. I was going to say, apart from Fernando.
His car shouldn't be burning him.
Well, yeah, but he didn't even complain about that. He was just like, yeah, I had a hot
bottle. Well, he did in the race. He was like, can you chuck some water over me? And they were like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't do that in regulation. I was like, how do you think? Yeah, we're going to put ice packs under his thumb. No, he did complain during the race, sorry. But afterwards, when he came to the media, and that's the point where he can have a shout about things if he wants to complain about the team. But he didn't really. He just said, yeah, it was something that was under my bum that was hot.
Yeah.
But that's very specific to Aston Martin, in fairness. And he has had that, from my understanding, at other tracks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Food for thought for Aston. Actually,
stop burning the bottom of your drivers.
Stop burning the bottom of the drivers. Okay. One last point, actually, I wanted to bring up as well. Mm-hmm. On the topic of Aston Martin.
Yep.
Jess Hawkins.
Yeah.
Got her run at, was it Silverstone? Can't just remember the track she did.
Wasn't it Barcelona? Oh my God.
Oh no, it might have been Barcelona.
I thought it was Barcelona.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
It rained.
Yeah. Catalunya.
It was Barcelona. I'm almost certain of it. If not, just like, well, get one of those TikTok voices that go over and go, Barcelona. I think it was Barcelona. Yeah, we spoke to her actually in Qatar, and she was really pleased with the performance. And yeah, it's another great step. My only concern is that where do we go from this step? And I hope that leads to something else. Because obviously when Susie Wolf had her test, she said very similar things. It's a great thing for women. It's, you know, I'm hoping it's the stepping stones and et cetera, et cetera. And then nothing really happened. So I'm hoping that this is alongside F1 Academy, alongside various different things. And
which will be on TV this weekend.
Yes, it's going to be live in Austin, which is their final round, I believe.
Yep.
And it's going to be shown live, which is great. I'm really happy about that. So it's going to be good to watch.
I'm definitely going to give that a watch.
And then next year, obviously, it just follows Formula 1 on the calendar. So that's also really great news. And I would assume this is like a trial. I don't know, but I would assume this is a trial to then see how they firstly monetize it and secondly show it live on TV next year. Fingers crossed, we hope. I mean, obviously I'm a woman, so I'm going to be like, I'd love to see more women in Formula 1, but it's got to come from the top, and that's the only way we can kind of feed it all down to get women into it. It's just, I get the question a lot of like, but hasn't it changed massively? And I'm like, do you see a Formula One driver that's a female? Do you see that? Then no, it hasn't really changed. What we've done is we've been able to make the sport more accessible to have more women involved.
Yep.
Great. But we still haven't got past that barrier into, and this is a point that Jess made, which was a really great point. We're not looking for, you don't need to have the next woman that comes through being a Lewis Hamilton, being a Max Verstappen, being whatever it is. We get a lot of drivers that are not the Max Verstappens or Lewis Hamiltons. But what we need is a big enough volume of women coming through to find five great ones and one superstar. But what we're having is five coming through and none of them being able to progress.
Yep.
Or you get 10 coming through and you have five that are great and one that's a superstar. But the volume is not working at the moment. So you're not getting enough women there being supported to find the one superstar.
Mm. And even just to get to F2, you need to be a superstar. You need to, like, the percentage of total drivers who get into karting and want to take it serious, who actually get to even F2, F3, like, on merit, is tiny.
But think how, like, it's just it's literally just a pyramid. So you go from the bottom. Everyone knows what a pyramid is. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm like, this is what a pyramid looks like. But you know what I mean?
To all
like,
the audio-only listeners, it's a triangle.
Please Google it. It's a triangle. But you know what I mean? Like, you need to have the base of the pyramid needs to be bigger to support the way to the top. And if that is smaller, then you got a tiny pyramid and then you're just not, it's broken. Yeah. The analogy's gone, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the way Jess worded it was, it's a numbers game.
Yeah, it's a numbers game.
And
it is.
My opinion is that you only need, because, you there's still a lot of people out there who don't believe that, you know, that a woman will never get to F1 because of physiological disadvantage, blah, blah, blah.
Boobs getting in the way.
It happens.
Mine do, to be fair. Every time I drive the car.
For me, you only need one example to prove against that. And for me, the one that always comes to mind for me is Michelle Mouton.
Yeah.
Who,
yeah.
you know, achieved success in WRC that I would argue is more physically demanding and more challenging than Formula One. Yeah. Like, I find that spectacle of World Rally more impressive. And what, back in the 80s, she was up there fighting with very best.
And then how long ago was that? So why didn't that get more women involved? You know, there's just so many, so many factors that come into this, and there's no easy, fast rule or change or however it was,
because it's so difficult to measure the impact of, even like you say, Susie Wolf's test.
Yeah,
like maybe that has had an impact, but it probably has, but it's slowly. Almost impossible to measure that impact, isn't it, as well?
It's like, again, to go back to that first question, what changes have you seen in Formula One? Well, some loads, like some massive, some not at all. And this is what I'm talking about. So Jess has been incredible. She has done a great job. And it's been really good to see. And I hope to see more of that. But, you know, at her stage in her career, in terms of super license points, that's probably not what she's going to be looking at anymore. It's getting into Formula One. However, her being there might then get 5 more girls involved at a younger age. And F1 Academy will help with that, I hope. Because even this year, next year is going to be so different because teams have to put a driver forward.
Yep.
So they've got investment now.
Yeah.
So once you put investment behind anyone, whether it be male, female, anybody of any gender or non-gender, it doesn't matter as long as you've got backing to go through. And this is where F1's gone. What did W Series not do that F1 could change? Get F1 teams involved.
Yep.
Get them invested. And then it will take time, but get them invested, push a driver forward.
Yep. And having it as a support series, I think, as well.
Excellent.
Super important.
And F1 Academy could never have existed without W Series. Let's not forget that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a shame what happened with W Series, but it's been amazing that a new concept has come along to make sure that women are still being... And I hope, this is going to be a controversial one, I'm sure I'd get... But I would hope in 10 years' time, we won't need F1 Academy.
Well, that ideally is the point, isn't it?
In theory. Well, that was the point of W Series, that eventually wouldn't... And I haven't heard that from F1 Academy. I haven't heard that same business plan in the defense of me just saying this. But what I would hope is that, you know, maybe in 10 years is too ambitious, but 20 years' time, that we don't need to have women driving in a separate category to know that women will be fast.
Yeah.
They will get the backing from a lower part, you know, lower down, and then they'll move forward.
And I think backing... That point is so important, because even in sports that are considered very accessible, like, I don't know, football, basketball, tennis, whatever,
football,
if you don't have
backing,
if you don't have the backing in those kind of sports, the chance of making it to the top are tiny, because you need the support and the backing and the...
Well, look at the Women's World Cup. Look at the backing that the Women's World Cup was given and look how amazing it was. Yeah, it was ruined at the end by a man. But, you know, the amazingness of what the women did in that whole... you know, tournament was just incredible.
Yeah.
You know, and that was through the backing of people going, why don't we put it on telly?
Let's
put it on the radio.
People will actually watch it.
If you give it to them, they will come.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's amazing. It's, you know, that was such a turning point.
Sport can be enjoyed at all different levels, you know. You know, and in the same way that, you know, I'll watch various different levels of football and, you know, I don't know, like National League football, and you can like go and really enjoy, and there's a junior series as well, you know, all of these drivers at different levels, and sport, we love watching sport, like regardless of across the board. So
cricket and rugby do a good thing, they put the women's game on first. So if you go to like they used to, I don't know if they still do it now, I think I'm pretty sure they do, but if you go to like a T20 game, you're what the women will be playing first. So you turn up and you watch another game.
Yeah,
it's like, great, all right, cool.
Yeah, sport. And shout out Jamie Chadwick, who's getting there with IndyNex as well.
Yes,
performances as of late have definitely stepped up. I know she had a bit of a difficult start to the year, but
yeah,
she's got a bunch of top tens under her
helmet
now.
Yeah, it's been good to see Jamie doing well. We all knew Jamie was incredible when she was in W Series. You know, the talent was talked before W Series about Jamie. The good thing about W Series, and this is not me saying, you know, to discredit what Jamie did, Jamie was a superstar before she got W Series. What's been amazing with things like W Series is seeing new people come forward, you know, like Naomi Schiff arguably wouldn't be on Sky were it not for W Series and them seeing her talent there.
Yeah.
Alice Powell wouldn't be on Channel 4 if it wasn't for W Series and them seeing their talent there and different things. Obviously, it's not racing, but they know that they know the racing craft. And that's been amazing to see as well. So W Series has really helped pinpoint lots of different talent in lots of different places.
Absolutely. No, I'm really looking forward to the F1 RK. Check it out this weekend, Austin. It will be on the TV.
Yeah.
Claire, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. Where can the people find you who are listening watching?
Here.
Well, if they...
I'm right here.
Do you want them to turn up? They give your exact address.
You can find me at... follow me on Insta. Just my name, Claire Cottingham. If you want to see no one tweet, then follow me on there. Claire Cottingham. yeah, catch any stuff that I'm doing. I've got lots of exciting things coming up. So away from, you know, race fans as well. So if you want to read some fun stuff about race fans, go to racefans.net. But I don't put anything exciting on Instagram either, now I'm thinking about it.
Same.
Oh, I got a video of a dog this morning, actually.
Just
that's a lie.
This one.
I mean, I would.
He is my Instagram feed. Well, thank you again, Claire. Thank you, Minton, for being
a good
boy.
Thank you for having me. You've been such a good boy.
He's been very good, hasn't
he? You've been... No.
He's been very settled, this one. Again, drop a like if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well if you're listening on audio only. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, all that good stuff. I'm sure you've done it already. I'm sure they've done it already.
That's why they're here.
Yeah, of course they
are. If not, then make sure you subscribe.
Exactly.
It all counts, doesn't it?
It all counts. It all helps. And then see you on Sunday for the live stream for the Austin Grand Prix. Oh, near and back as well.
Well, you'll be tired.
I'll be shouting. No, it's late in the day. So
no?
It's right. Yeah.
Which is the one that you said you got? Las Vegas.
Vegas.
Tune in for Las Vegas one. When he's knackered.
Yeah, we're always here. Don't you worry. Right. Say bye, Minton. Ciao, adios. We're done. Goodbye, everyone.